All right, we got Wolfpack leader, head of the Wolfpack, Duke Pham from Century 21 Atria.
What a great intro.
Yes, that's it.
Finally, we got a chance to sit down after like 3-4 months of us trying to meet up.
I know, right? You've been busy. I've been busy.
I've been drinking.
You've been drinking? I've been drinking too. So how's it going? How's business for you guys?
Business took an unexpected turn. It's getting a lot busy. Busier.
That's a good thing.
Getting a lot busier.
That's a good thing, my friend. Yeah. I know the market has really heated up ever since January. Last year is completely like Q4 dead. Then all of a sudden, boom.
Q4 was a struggle
for everybody.
I had to work really, really hard to close a very, very small amount of deals in Q4.
Yeah.
Usually Q4, I'm out. I'm like traveling. I'm out. I don't give a fuck. Right.
I know.
But I was like, oh, this is the first year. You know, market's slow. Let me grind out a Q4 and see if I can increase my volume.
Right.
Wasn't worth the ROI.
Yeah, wasn't worth it at all.
It was a very hard grind to get almost anything done. Like it was like pushing anything was impossible almost.
So is that just for your own business or like the whole team?
Because I think because I speak to a lot of agents and I think it's a whole market thing.
Like yeah.
I think a lot of people, and I was lucky to only struggle Q4. A lot of people are struggling since Q1, Q2 last year, right? It was
The whole last year was a struggle.
The whole last year for a lot of agents was a struggle. Agents. And you're going to see that a lot of them are going to find a drop off this year.
Yeah, no.
Or they have already because the damn TREF fees are so high.
The fees, yeah. I heard from one of the broker managers that 6% of the agents dropped off, like not licensed anymore.
6%.
Yeah. So right after they implemented the new insurance, the mandatory insurance that we have to get, which costs thousands of dollars. So there's a bunch of agents that's probably parking the license part-time, and they're like, forget it. We're not going to get this insurance. So 6% of the agents automatically dropped off ever since they implemented that new insurance.
Do you think that's a high enough amount?
Well, that is just from right after insurance. I don't know the stats with... Because of the market last year, a lot of agents couldn't sustain and did not producing enough income. And then they just, I believe it's much higher than 6%. If you include
if you talk 6% and we're, 100,000 realtors, like for easy math, right?
Ontario, yeah. 80 to 100
That's only 6,000 agents.
I know. That's just from the insurance. That's why I feel like there's another 10% maybe that last year because of the down market, they...
I think another 30% needs to drop out.
They switched to another job.
Because, you know, when you're doing deals, sometimes... Like I would say majority of the agents don't know what they're doing, right? Mm. And so much part-timers, so much like side hustles. Mm. It's such a hard place to do a deal with those agents because they don't understand comps, they don't understand certain things you're supposed to do because they just don't have the experience to. And it makes the deal 10 times harder, even on the listing side and the buying side, right?
That's the thing about very unique about our industry is when we're doing deals with on the other side, when you're cooperating, it's like the landscape is so broad. Sometimes you get a real competent, experienced agent and it's so easy to do a deal with. Or you get an agent that just started, has no clue what they're doing. Great attitude maybe, but like still, they have no idea what they're doing. You have to handhold them the whole way of the deal. But at the same time, it doesn't matter if you're experienced or you've been doing this for a long time. The attitude is wrong too, right? They're like the egotistic agent that's obviously making the deal more challenging. That's why this whole landscape in this industry is so broad. It's all sorts of characters.
So I have a fun way of dealing with egotistic agents.
Okay.
I always tell them I'm a new agent.
That's a good one.
It's funny.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Because egotistic agents love to teach.
They do.
I'm like, listen, I don't do much deals. I don't understand the comps here. Can you show me? Can you guide me? I don't know if your price is right. I don't know if your price is wrong. I'm scared. I don't know the area. What they do is they start teaching you. They're like, well, look, this is why I priced it like this. This is why I'm doing it like this. This is why it's worth like that. I'm like, oh, but I saw this one. How does that compare? They're like, oh, well, yeah. That, like, if you're looking in the market, this one is a little nicer, but this is what my client wants. And then they start fizzling up. Because I've tried so many other ways. Me and you are going at it, both senior agents at comps. When you look at comps, you can justify anything.
Mm-hmm.
You can fucking justify anything, mm-hmm. right? So it's really, really hard to have two senior agents justifying, and then at a point, you just get pissed.
Yeah.
You get pissed at each other, and the deal's going to die.
No, you're absolutely right.
I'm like, yo, go ahead. Tell me everything. I'm still not going to give you your price, but I want you to lead the convo so I can win.
Yeah, if you're leading a convo, you're talking way too much, especially in a cooperative side. You don't need to pitch your offer or anything, because especially in this kind of market now where everything is multiple offers and you try and everything is purposely priced lower and you don't know where the, you're trying to get it from them, right? Where is the seller price expecting, right?
Right.
I do something similar too, is when I first call them and I'm on the buyer side, submitting an offer, I always introduce myself as, hi, I'm Raymond, sales agent with either, I either say sales representative with House or agent with Remax. I don't say like anything like, oh, team leader, broker, none of that. Don't say anything.
I'm like, hey, dude, can you help?
Yeah, exactly.
Keep it very simple. Keep it very fun and
casual.
Easy. Like, I don't know. What do you want? Like,
yeah.
What do you want? Like, can you give me a phone? I'm like, I really don't think so, man.
Yep.
So it's funny. I've only been caught once from an agent. I did that, and we ended up winning the bid. She's like, Duke, you played me well. I looked you up after. She's like, I'm glad you won. That was a very good move.
Nice. I'm glad. I love it. Like, that's the beauty of this business is and career. It's like a chess game. It's like a chess move sometimes. And I love that kind of challenge. And every deal is a different scenario and different challenge. I love that. And that's why for all these years, it still drives me to continue trading real estate, because you always encounter different situations.
What do you think of the new chess game Trebis has released on us with
the
disclosing and undisclosing and in between rounds?
Just a lot more documents for us to fill in.
Documents, yes, but there's always a fun way into playing. Like, I haven't seen a single agent do it yet, and I'm waiting for the right house. I'm waiting for the right house to try, because if you open the first round and close the middle and open up the end, it's such a interesting move to do, right? And even if you open it all, like, I've always been for open bidding process.
Me too. Actually, we've been doing that already.
I think it's gonna always net you the higher price, because the top buyer, no matter you say, the agents are gonna say you were really close. You just barely won, so you don't feel like you gave them 80K more, right? So you're never gonna know. But if you open it up, and they actually are, most of the time they are actually close, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the other three people would have the comfort to actually push higher because they don't think they're being played. Most of the time, buyers think they're being played when they're bidding.
Well, that's why you need a competent agent. And just like you, you got to know how to work the listing agent and do the whole buddy-buddy and work with them. Because that's the whole point. It's like, we're cooperating to get a deal done. No, it shouldn't be like ego in a way, or you one up him and one up the, it's not like that. So what you try to introduce with disclosing with the seller's permission, if we could disclose the other bids, we've been doing that already, actually. If you really think about it, when you're on the listing side,
because
a lot of times the good buying agents will know how to ask the listing agent,
right?
The gauge, like, okay, where it's at, right? And there's only so much information we can disclose without asking the seller's permission. And a lot of times we do give, after asking the seller, we give those kind of hints and tips, because at the end of the day, you still got to guide them. It can't just always be like, try your best. Okay?
How do you guide the buying agents? I would like to see how you guide them versus me.
Well, we can't be the one disclosing and be like, hey, this is what it takes. This is what it takes.
Right.
Add this, add that. You can't do that.
Right.
Because you don't know at the end of the day, a lot of times, what the seller price is.
Right.
So you got to leave it for them to ask the right questions.
Right. So what is a question when someone goes, for example, how far am I apart from the top offer?
You just got to give them a ranking. You got to give the ranking, right? You got to be like, you're in third or fourth place. You're not allowed.
So we'll role play a little bit, right? So you're the listing agent. Okay. So it's like, listen, my client has a budget. I don't want to feel like I'm being played.
Mm-hmm.
Give me something to go back to my client with. Like, how am I ever gonna know when you say third place and first place might be 300K?
Yeah.
Like, how the that's ranking's not helping me.
That's why typically it starts off with the ranking first, third or fourth place. And if they really drill and really dive deep into it.
Right. How would you guide me?
Oh, guide you?
I wanna win. How would you guide me?
Okay, well, first I gotta say the comps too, right? Like,
okay.
You're far apart from the comp.
Let's say I'm at the comp and I'm still in third place.
Okay, then I gotta...
I don't care about the comp right now. I'm just telling you, between me and first place, how would you guide me?
Then I gotta remind them, this is how many offers registered.
Right.
There's
right.
three guys ahead of you.
Yeah.
And then let's just say you're in third place, fourth place.
Yeah.
And there's total seven offers. So you already know that there's seven offers and you're already at the comp and there's seven offers registered and you're on the third, fourth place.
Yeah.
And based on that, you already know you have a good guide. You really have a good gauge that you're in between, like, oh, 1.6 to 1.63. You should know.
Right.
Should know. So, and again, I can't be the one saying it. You got to be the one asking me the right questions.
It's funny because I always, like, really push the pedal hard, right?
You
and
should.
They're always like, I can't tell you. I can't tell you. I'm like, okay, well, can you tell me this? Am I three Louis Vuitton apart? Or am I two Honda Civics apart? Like,
yeah.
Guide me, right? And they're like, oh, you're about a car part. I'm like, well, what type of car? Is it like a Civic? Is it a Benz? And then you start see, really making it fun and pushing them in, right?
You have code languages.
Yeah.
That's the way to go, right?
Yeah. Well, I don't do that on my end, but when I'm trying to get a price from a listing agent,
smart.
Listen, you don't have to disclose the price. Just tell me the type of car, right? Is it a van? Is it a rare car? If it's a rare car, I'm just going to leave because my client doesn't have that kind of budget.
Right. No, those are great tips, right? And that's why a lot of, especially the newer agents, thinks that they have to do one way and that's the highway. Like, you have to follow by the books. There are creative ways to do it, right? And you did it.
You know, problem with, I always have a problem with new agents, not because they're new or inexperienced. I have a problem with people getting into the industry thinking it's a sales job.
Mm-hmm.
It's so... Because I train a lot of new agents, right? And I never like to hire people that have went to school for, let's say, finance or whatever other fields and don't have a sales background because they come into it just studying the courses and not understanding what sales really is, right?
Yeah.
It's really, really hard because they actually go into it selling.
Yeah.
They will take the product they're given and hard push and keep telling the clients, it's the best. And then they go... deal after deal and not closing, and they don't understand why they're not closing. Our job is to match a product to our client. You don't always have to sell them the house you're listing. It may not be the right fit. You can hard push as much as you want for your seller. It's not going to match this client. Your job for your seller is to find the right client for the right house.
Mm-hmm.
And then for the client that you do meet, which is a potential lead, your job is also to match the right product to this.
Absolutely.
Right. And everyone just thinks they're like, oh, well, this house is, I had this funny open house I walked into. And this agent was so pushy, right? Mm-hmm. And we walked in and the field next is construction, right? She's like, construction's good. It's great. It's going to happen in 1 year. And the school, everyone loves to be close to the school. Well, like there's no, like it's everything is a positive. Yeah. And it shows clients are not going to give you their lead. They're not gonna, right? I should do open houses. You know, when I say I used to do open houses, I want to retract myself that I should probably go back to it because I get a lot of leads.
And so it's a lead generator. Open house.
It's great if you know what you're doing, right? Mm-hmm. So my background is I was in sales for not cars, but I was like a mechanic when I was 15 because I didn't really finish high school, right? So I went and worked there, and our job in the beginning is to identify what's wrong with the car. And what servicing the car needs. So I was top sales there at Mr. Loop, right? It's funny, Mr. like oil changes, got commission, battery, transmission oil change. I know my way to service a car. And I wasn't selling them stuff they didn't need.
Yeah.
Right? And that's what I picked up. Then I went to retail and I was selling jeans and suits. And I was also top sales there because some people hate buying jeans because a certain fit don't fit them properly. They look silly. They don't look good. If you're able to tell the person's body type and you're able to match them to the right rise, the right cut, and make them look good, they're going to buy like 100 pairs at once. You take that mentality and then you shift into real estate and you find the right product for your client, you're going to sell. You're going to automatically sell. But new agents, they get in and they think it's a sales job. If people want green, they start pushing fucking red. And they're like, red is the best color ever. Right.
We're solution providers.
Right.
Comes down to that. We're not salesmen. We're simply asking the right questions and providing the best solution for them based on their current status right now. Right. So, yeah, you're absolutely right. Any agent that comes in and think that, you know, you have to do a sales pitch, it's totally wrong. If you're talking too much in the conversation, especially in the listing appointment or in a buying appointment you just met, a first-time buyer that's looking to buy, you're definitely doing the wrong way. It's supposed to be the other way around. The clients or the potential seller and buyer is supposed to be the one that saying to you as the advisor, the consultant, that you know, this is what I'm going through right now. And you got to be asking the right questions and then providing the best solution.
It's, you know, it's funny because every agent, when they go to a listing appointment, they believe they always pitch the highest possible price they can get for the house. But that's may not be important. A faster closing might be important, right? Mm-hmm. Easier transition, no open house might be important to that client where they want their privacy. They just want a quick, easy deal. The agents don't ask. They just push a crazy high number and they're like, oh, I'm going to get this. But the client may not even want that. So not a lot of people actually understand this job as well as I want it to be. Yeah. So I would almost want to see this industry tighten. Because it makes it my job a lot harder, man. Like, I don't want to do deals with half these people. Like, it's so difficult.
Well, that becomes a training issue. And a lot of agents, because they're new and they haven't got the right training, they overpromise to get the business, to get the deal. We get that a lot too when we go to listing appointments, right? I've been talking to my best friend, my uncle that's an agent, or just another agent in general, that, oh, they told me it's this price for the house. They can give me this price. And we already know that that's way off, right? They're just saying that because they can't back it up with other services or value. So they have to overpromise them to get the listing. We go in there and say that, listen, we're not here to tell you what you want to hear. We're here to tell you what you need to hear, right? Because that can have serious repercussions for you if you go with that. If you truly believe that that's the price, like shooting for the moon, that does you no good.
It's funny. Like, I take the same approach, but there is that 1 out of 10 time I am wrong and they get the moon price. It's crazy. Sometimes.
Lucky.
Right. Lucky, whatever it is. They catch
the right timing with the market.
It's funny. Like, but in the back of your head, you're like, fuck, was I wrong?
Yeah. Right? Especially it gets you even more
irritated. You see there, right? They actually sold it for that price. Like, see, I told you.
And it gets you even more irritated when you know that it's like a discount agent, listing agent, where like...
And they get the price.
Yeah, they literally did nothing other than putting a sign on the lawn and they got the price.
And
like,
then I'm like, am I a bad agent? Am I shit at my job?
It's just lucky.
I go back, I look at the comps, I was like, fuck.
Yeah. Catch the right timing.
Right. So it's an interesting... But, you know, 9 out of 10 times when they overlist, they're going to sit.
So, Duke, let's go back to when you're younger. You mentioned to me that since 15, you were in mechanic, right?
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. So when did you got licensed in real estate?
Oh, my God. It's a very long-winded story. I'll short form it, okay?
No, it's okay. You don't have to short form it.
Okay.
That's what we're here for.
Right. So 15,
I would love to hear the journey, brother.
15, I worked on cars. Actually, prior to that, like maybe 13, my uncle, I wasn't really into school. I grew up in a rough neighborhood. I have family problems. Like, me and my mom were fighting. I don't know my dad. So it's like a single mom raising me. And, you know, at that age, you have like this ego manhood, right? I don't want to go to school. You don't understand me. Blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
So my uncle took me in, told me I was sanding fucking doors in a factory. Like, it was the toughest thing. I quit in like 3 days. Then I went to Mr. Lube. My friend got me a job. I knew nothing about cars. The oil was hot. Like, there's so much fucking numbers. Like, transmission oil has like 5W20, 0W40. Like, each car has its own oil, and they scare you. You put the wrong oil in, you're gonna blow up the fucking engine, right?
Tell me about it. I just recently went to Canadian Tire to buy a coolant, and even then, the coolant, there's so many different types.
Very, very different types. So it was a very good skill for me to learn at a young age.
Yes.
Right? And then tire changes. And then so I did a lot of that, and then I didn't realize most jobs are sales jobs. Like in that kind of format. Like, I thought I was working on cars. But working on cars at the end of the day is like, how much revenue are you bringing in? So you need to be able to sell services, right? Especially at Mr. Lube. They come in for... I don't think they make money on their oil changes. Their oil changes back then was like $29.99 for a 10-minute oil change.
Just to hook them in.
Right. Yeah. And then so you have... The battery changes was, I remember if I was able to replace the battery, it was $10 commission. My hourly wage was like $7 then. How much damn batteries I sold in a day? Yo, it was crazy. And
a lot.
Transmission oil, I would do, it was like maybe, I remember $7. And wiper blades was the craziest markup at Mr. Lube. The commission on that was almost 50%. It was crazy.
I did something similar at Future Shop with selling computers.
Yeah, oh, right.
Every part, every accessories, like
the actual
laptop and the computer makes nothing. But typically people walk into Future Shop at the computer department just to get that computer, that HP or that laptop.
Whatever.
It's the accessories, right?
Right, right?
The battery charger, we tell them that, yo, it's power surge prevention, and that happens a lot. And you got to get the pads. Other accessory, mouse pad. Those are the one that's high commission.
How about warranties? You guys get commission.
Warranty is the most, sorry. Yeah, warranty is the one that's the biggest moneymaker.
Yeah.
Yes.
So they always push warranty on you.
Always,
right?
Yeah. So after mechanic, how did you transition to, what was the next career?
I went to Max. As a greeter. Max, the
What's
clothing
Max?
Store.
Oh!
Yeah, the clothing store.
Okay.
So I went to Max and young kid, I think I was 16, 17 at the time. I don't remember my age. The guy put me as a greeter because he thinks I'm just some young punk, right? So I was in front of the store. Vaughn Mills is this peak time for that mall, right? It was like recently opened. The foot traffic was like maybe 40,000 people a day. My job was to greet all 40,000 people and sell whatever was available on that front table to the clients. That was like, I was so shy back then. Like, I had to say hi, bye to every single person that walked in and make sure they buy something from that table. Then I became like top sales just from one table for a very couple months. And then I got moved into suits, and then I had to learn how suits are supposed to be worn, how to tailor suits, what fits what, ties, how to do them. And I became top sales at suits. And then I got a manager, like a key holder role. Then I went to manager role. And then my growth kind of stopped there because I was too young for that brand to be anything bigger. Then I went over to Buffalo, which was next door. So it was like a jean store. At that time, Buffalo was they were competitors to Parasuco.
Yes, I still remember. I think Parasuco is not around anymore.
Neither is Buffalo.
Oh, yeah.
Neither is Buffalo. So then I did that, and then I went to Buffalo for 7, 8 years, managing a couple stores, going back and forth.
Okay.
I had a lot of fun there. I learned a lot. I learned business-wise because I got more responsible. Buffalo and Max were two very different companies. Buffalo is a family-run company, so I had to learn a lot of the stuff. Where Max is like, you just have to watch the floor and manage inventory. Buffalo's like, oh, you know, what inventory do we buy in? How do you allocate your hours for your staff? How do you improve your staff sales? How do you do loss prevention better? So you learn so much aspects behind the business. Like, stores are granted like a 1% theft rate
a
year.
Yeah.
Because it's going to happen. If you have a 1% theft rate, it's a good thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like, you learn how to approach clients. You learn how... It's like the whole follow-up process in retail is so crazy. So when my kids get older, I will throw them right into retail because you learn so much.
You do.
You have to make sure the store is clean. You have to say hi and bye to clients. And, you know, when you go into a fitting room after you find them the right product, what do you have to do? You don't just let them try on. You have to go follow up. You learn so much about the process of selling.
So that's how you learn the skills.
Yeah.
Is that where you transition to real estate?
No, so here's the kicker.
Okay.
So 7 years in, I think I was like 22, 23 maybe. And I was watching some of my other manager friends that were older in the 30s and stuff slowly getting weeded out. Like, how long are you going to wear skinny jeans for, right, back then? And then they don't fit the role anymore. They don't fit the look. I was like, listen, I don't. And then at that time, I was so cool from 15 to 20 something because I was making really good money. I was making like 60, 70K a year. And this is like 20 years ago,
20 years
almost
ago.
Right?
Yeah.
That's a lot of money for a kid, right? And then my friends started getting bank jobs. They started going to med school. I'm like, oh, I'm going to be really behind in 5, 10 years. Like, this is not going to go anywhere for me, right?
Right.
So I told my mom, I said, I'm really unhappy. I want to do something else. At the time, I had this crazy dream that was just, I felt like I was really academically efficient, I guess. I don't know. I thought when I was in school, I was really good at it. So I thought I couldn't maybe go to med school or whatnot. So I told my mom, I was like, okay, quit your job. I'll cover your bills. Go live your dream. Do your school and build your life for you. 2 months in, because I had to go get my GED because I didn't finish high school, right? I had to actually like literally go back and try to do everything.
Okay.
And 2 months in, my mom comes home and she ended up buying 2 houses in Aurora. She's like, well, I can't help you no more.
Mm.
she really screwed me.
Okay.
I quit my job.
Yeah.
Right. And she said she was gonna, you know. And at the time, I was like, yo, that's like that. Like that really hurt our relationship during that
time. She didn't
buy
one house. She bought two houses.
She bought fucking two houses.
Okay.
And yeah.
Okay.
And she said she's gonna help me. And then I'm sitting there. I was living at my ex-girlfriend's house in Hamilton. One room. Like there's four or five people in there. No money. Mom kind of abandoned me for the help that for me studying. I'm like, what the fuck do I do now?
Right.
Do I just go back to retail? Like, what am I supposed to do? Then I was like, you know what? I've always been good at sales. Let me take the course and see what happens. And I was like, I was thinking in my head, my mom's going to buy two houses. At least I can get the commission off that, right? So, and my family, I have seven aunts, and we're really, really close. Like, they've all raised me like their moms because I don't know my dad. So I treat them all like my moms, and they all buy real estate. What they love to do is, like, let's say Springwater just opened up, right? They'll buy seven in the same row. So they're all close to each other. So I was like, you know what? Sounds easy to me. So I did that, right? And then that's when I got into real estate. About 24, 25. This is my seventh or eighth year in real estate.
Love it. Love it. Love that story. No, I love it how you came from so much resiliency, right? Like, you know, you had all, mom was supposed to help you out. And
I crawled my way.
You crawled your way. You got to crawl before your ball.
Yeah.
Okay. So you started off with your mom's referral. Because I went, especially.
No, it's funny because you always believe that your family's going to give you deals.
So how did you start off? Where did your business come from?
My first year was interesting. Obviously they helped me with some referrals. My main source was my mom and my aunt owns nail salons, right? Of course, they're Vietnamese.
Vietnamese.
One is in where Peter's is. So that plaza.
And Markham?
Yeah, yeah. Where Peter's steakhouse is.
Okay.
Across.
Got it.
Where Patrick Street Extreme is. Right across. So,
yep. Yep.
My mom's salon's there and my aunt's salon's across Atria, Bayview Hill.
Got it.
So I'm looking at the two locations. I grab my laptop as a new agent, you know, and I always, because retail, you have to dress nice, right?
Okay.
I always believe, tie, pocket squares. It was that era of realtors that had to, like, to the nines, like, I would go to work every single day because I didn't know that real estate almost wasn't like that. I felt like I have to show up at the office every day, 9 to 5, and real estate for a new agent is like that. Let me clarify. It's very, very different.
Well, everyone has their own style.
Right, okay. Right. So then I would take my laptop. I will sit on one of those pedicure chairs, okay? And then what do you have at Bayview Hill? Lots of rich moms, right?
Yes.
Lots of rich wives that come there to not just maybe change one nail polish color and then maybe just do nothing and just gossip. Mm-hmm. I'm sitting there. My aunt, that's my nephew. He's in real estate. They love nothing more back then because there's no House Sigma.
Yeah.
How much does this house sell for?
The sold data.
Oh, what do you think this is? It's sitting beside. So I did that for hours. Every single day for a year straight. And I built up a lot of good clients from there. A lot of powerful people, man. A lot of powerful people in that nail salon. You'd be surprised. Like, insanely powerful. I met a lot of people. And then through my years of retail and the employees I had, I've always had a good network. And then it started flowing in.
I loved how you leverage your mom's nail salon. Where
It was a great farming area, man. I should probably go back.
Yeah, but you know, you could have just not be like, you know, forget about my mom and then, you know, and forget about not hustling. But you hustled. You proactively went to your mom's nail salon every single day to meet people and talk to people, right?
What 24-year-old trying to do real estate in Richmond Hill, what hall else are you going to meet clients, right?
That's what it is.
Do you think you're too young? You're like, my friends don't have the money to buy. You know, all these thoughts of a new realtor. I don't have a proper website, you know? I need the best looking business cards.
Like, that's what I want to, you know, explain to especially the listeners that are new, is that you got to go where the money is. If you don't, sometimes people ask me like, oh, I don't know anybody. Then you got to go out and meet people and go where people are high net worth or high network, right? And where you are, luckily, like your mom is positioned in a very wealthy area. But I'm sure you hustling mindset, even if your mom didn't have a nail salon, you probably would have hustled somewhere else.
Right. But it's funny, those clients didn't transact till my third years in.
It takes time to build.
Because those were high net worth clients. They're not going to use a new kid.
Exactly.
My main source of income was always from renters and very small budget places, right? I remember my first year I was at Atria and it was a snowstorm because I was probably the only guy in the office because, you know, a lot of agents don't go to the office, right? Sitting there, there's this lead Atria passed me, this rental lead. So nobody wants to, I'm assuming nobody wanted to do it. It's a semi in Jaden Finch. It's where I was growing up, right? So ended up going there, meeting this guy. One of my best clients today.
Okay.
He's like, I need to rent. I can't afford to buy. He's very scared and nothing. I was like, well, how come you're not buying? He's like, I only have 600K cash. The houses are like 800. I don't have enough. I was like, but you can get a mortgage.
Yes.
He's like, can I? I only make this much. I'm like, of course you can. That rental became a condo buy for an investment and a house buy for himself.
Amazing.
Then 2 years later, sold that. No, he 2 years later, he kept that rental. He bought a pre-con for me, and then he moved to a bigger house.
I love those stories.
That rental became four or five deals in a matter of 2 years. It's crazy.
You built up the portfolio.
Dude, like, why would you not do a rental?
So how did you establish trust and rapport? Because you just mentioned that you're young. It takes a few years until those Bayview Hill clients trusted you. How did you build rapport and trust?
Trust is an easy thing to build. Like, everyone overcomplicates it. Just be honest.
Be honest, right?
Honest, genuine.
Mm-hmm.
The people that like you will use you, even if you're new. You're honest. That's all you have to do. That's it, man. Don't try to fake it too much. Don't try to lie. Don't try to let them, like, just be honest. Like, oh, I don't think I can do that. I think I can do that. Or whatever. Whatever your honesty is to you, just be honest. Say what you do, and that's it.
But did you follow up like crazy with those clients? Like, how did you build up that relationship? Because I'm pretty sure you didn't just wait there at the salon for those aunties to come back and then you talk real estate later.
I'm not selective, but the people I talk to a lot generally like me and I like them. So my conversation is never about real estate. I genuinely like that person. So I know what they like. Like, if they're into cars, like, I'm like, yo, this car just came out. And then we're talking. I have this weird thing that the team's like, it's so hard to replicate because it's like the Duke's playbook, right? It's literally the most confusing, unorganized thing. I go through my WhatsApp list. That's my CRM. And generally, the people that make it on my WhatsApp list, I actually like, and they're my friends. So I'm just like, oh, yo. Like, I have a lot of hobbies, and my wife hates me because I spend a lot of money. I like everything. I like tattoos. I like cars. I like clothing. I like vacations. I like everything. I like eating out.
NFTs.
Golfs, NFT, everything. I into everything. So it's very hard for me not to have a conversation with someone that has an interest of mine. So
every time when I meet you, you talk a storm. You can never end up.
I always have like something.
Yeah.
Well, because I like you, right? Yeah. If I don't like you, you'll see me really quiet in the corner. So if you ever catch me not talking to you, I'm sorry. We just don't get along.
You're a talker for sure.
Yeah. He was like, oh, Duke doesn't talk much. Well, he probably just doesn't like you.
Yeah. Okay. So that's amazing. Now, I just want the listeners to know, because you never had anything given to you. You know, you weren't in a family of real estate. You know, you never had anybody fed you with a silver spoon. You really started from, you know, in a rough background, a rough neighborhood, you know, and you had to figure it out yourself.
I think I was watching Instagram and TikTok, and it's like, there's this funny reel. It's like, how are you going to make your son like a crazy hustler, like go-getter or NBA star, right? He's like, the guy made, it was obviously a joke, right? But it really reminded me of my, how I grew up, right? He's like, I'm going to hire a nanny before my kid's two. And two people, one boy, one girl, and let him believe we are the nannies and those are his parents. And then by the time he's five, I'm gonna fire them and say they died in a car crash and now we're gonna adopt him. So now he's gonna live his whole life feeling he needs to avenge his parents and work really, really hard. It's that.
What is this, Batman?
Like, I don't know what it was. It's crazy, right?
That's
he's
crazy.
Like, now he's gonna spend his whole life trying to prove to his dead parents that he's gonna be like this superstar. So I know it's far fetched, but in my mind, extremely, it's like I grew up. My mom was always at work. I didn't know my dad. I always wonder what happened. And I'm like, in the back of my head, I'm like, I'm gonna prove you wrong for leaving, right? I'm gonna prove you wrong. I'm gonna make it. And obviously, back then, all the family is always like, you got to do good in school. You're gonna make it. Everyone's like, you know, growing up with seven, like, to me, there are seven moms, right? And they're like Vietnamese, hardcore, like they criticize you, right? Mm. You're never going to make it, Duke. You're ugly. You're short. You're never going to make it. You can't go to school. So it's like, no, I'm going to prove you guys all wrong. So in a way, they really built a character for me. They really, really helped me. Like, I don't care what people say, yeah. Right? Like, I don't, because I my answer way worse than anything you guys can say, right?
I had the similar relatives. I had a similar circle that I started very young too, like really young when I'm in university. Very similar. Just, you said you have factory work. I worked in a UPS factory loading up trailers.
Oh, you got a better job than me.
Probably,
I was
yeah.
Standing freaking doors.
Yeah. But like same thing, like my grandfather and my relative said that, oh, how are you capable of selling homes? That, like that's the literally the direct Chinese translation. And that fired me up. That fired me up. And I know what you mean.
It's my family was supported after I got into real estate. It's very, very different. Because they love homes, right? They didn't have the sold data too. And they're just nosy aunties, right? So they loved it too. Every day they were checking. They loved that I got into real estate.
That's great.
Yeah. But before that, they were against me doing cars, doing retail. And I always think back all the skills I learned. You know how many guys out there can't change a tire? It's
yeah.
Just, right. It's like even girls, right? They can't because these are normal skills, right?
Mm-hmm.
They can't. It's just a lot of things that I learned through my process of working. Obviously, I always wonder. I miss like, oh, I didn't get to do that whole dorm experience. I didn't go to university. I don't understand what all these like MBA titles behind people's names are. I actually am brain dead when it comes to those things. I'm looking at it. I'm like, they're just letters. Like, I have no idea. They're like, oh, we have to do an undergrad master's. I have no idea what that means. I know the words. I wish I knew a little bit more of that world. So
well,
that's,
now these MBA finance guys trust you and then they're buying from you.
Sometimes, yeah. Sometimes, right? Sometimes, yeah. Right? So it's like, I do think back, but I don't regret the skills I picked up because
yeah.
I see a lot of like, you know, grown adults that can't do basic things in life.
Well, it's street smart. It's street smart over book smart, right? And it doesn't matter what you are. But the best is when you have both, right? Book smart and street smart.
Right,
those are the most fierce.
Those are very, very like.
Yeah. Yeah, but I always say hustle will always be talent. As long as you hustle, you figure it out, right?
Yes, but you know, you also go through those roller coasters. Some months are hard, right? But you just got to tell yourself that if you just keep doing it, it'll be okay.
Yeah, definitely.
Like,
especially
people
in this industry,
they can think
it's a roller coaster ride.
Right, and people listen and they're like, oh, like if they listen to us talk and how we do our business and how in their mind successful we are and happy we're not. It's not as easy as it sounds, as we say. There's struggles. We get sad. We're unhappy. Clients fire us. I don't walk in and they sign a 5% listing agreement with me, right? They negotiate with me. They want some money back. Like it's struggling for us too. But if you give up, you're never going to see the end. You just got to keep going.
What's your craziest story with a client?
I had a funny story, not crazy. Okay. Then one that came to mind is I did this deal on East End, like around Whitby. I sold their house and then they're looking to purchase. And the lady hasn't bought a house in like 20, 30 years, right? And we were bidding and she kept losing and losing. But it was because they were obviously stuck at a budget and like it wasn't even the comp price. It's not like they were going over budget. They just kept going under comp every single time. And she got so frustrated with me and she texted me. She's like, I can't believe you call yourself Wolfpack. You're like a pack of puppies. My ego.
Whoa.
That's the one time my ego took over. I'm like, bye.
Okay.
It's like, I'm not working for you anymore.
Yeah.
I was like, listen, it's not my fault that you're losing these bids. You're going in with conditions and there's seven offers. Like, what do you want me to do? And
yeah.
I've explained this to you. My husband calls me like, no, I'm sorry. My wife, she's just getting emotional. I'm like, listen, I don't. And then I was like, I don't need to be talked down to. Like,
yeah.
I will do whatever it takes for clients. And sometimes clients get emotional. But if they direct that at me and blame me, that's when I cut it, right? I don't have the time for
you.
Got
to treat people like human beings, right? And that's not right. And that's when some people go over the line.
You know, sometimes people get mad and they like show their frustration towards you. And it's understandable. But when you go over the line, it's like, okay, come on, man, chill out. Don't harass what I'm trying to build. Yeah, I quit.
Fire that client, yeah.
Quit on her or she fired me.
You.
Whatever it is, right? I just,
yeah.
That was, there's certain lines I stop. That's my funniest story for it. The craziest one, I did, you know Jesse, right?
Mm-hmm.
I did a power sale with Jesse. was it 3 years ago, maybe? I don't remember. It was the owner owned a funeral home.
Okay.
And a moving company.
Okay.
So he obviously didn't want to leave the house, right? So we finally had the eviction court order and got keys to the house. We walk in. There's a big casket in the middle, open
Whoa.
Casket. It's crazy.
That's crazy.
Scary, right?
In the
right?
middle of the house?
Yeah. Whoa. And then we will come out of the house. He'll get four of his truckers to block our cars in. And he's like, it just got like very, very aggressive. And in my head, I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah.
No wonder Jesse got me to co-list with her on this one, right? And, but, you know, I learned so much through that deal.
Yeah.
We end up selling it. But it was such a, it was just a very aggressive, like, deal. Because that, and then they would leave the water running in the basement, so the house started flooding or the kitchen started flooding. It was just a lot.
That's a crazy story.
Yeah.
I saw a casket.
Walk into a casket in the house, in the front lawn, right?
I've seen that before. I saw a casket in my listing. It's a rental listing. So it was YC condo, penthouse, 65th floor.
The penthouse?
Yeah, two story. So he doesn't own a funeral home. He's actually a YouTube star. 2 million in subscribers.
Okay.
And this guy has some crazy videos. All he does, his videos are just basically kind of like dares. Like,
okay, you know, so those prank videos.
Those
or
prank
what
videos,
yeah, yeah,
right.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Just for content and all that stuff. So 2 million subscribers. And the day that moved out, he didn't answer his calls because I was supposed to do the whole exchange, a key exchange.
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
Inspect the property.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I end up going there because I have the copy of the key. He didn't answer my calls for the last few days. I go in there. Place was a mess, right? All sorts of props for his videos.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
I saw
yeah.
a casket
yeah, yeah, yeah.
in the condo.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's a 1,300 square feet penthouse condo. Somehow managed to move a casket.
In the elevator without anyone really saying anything.
In the elevator.
All the way up.
Yeah. And there's other stuff that we found too. We found a tank of piranhas. We found a mummy, like a King Tut.
Okay.
Kind of like mummy
yeah,
statue.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There's so many crazy stuff. And me and my team member, Rolando, we're there, and then we end up having to clean it up for him. He didn't answer his call. He just left everything there.
He just left everything there. So what happened? Did he ever call back about stuff? Or
no, it was crazy. And then
what'd you do with everything?
We had to move the casket down the stairs.
Did you throw it out? Like,
we put it on a dump.
Everything, the mummies.
Except for the mummy. Rolando, we didn't want the mummy. Rolando asked my landlord, is it okay that I keep the mummy?
Yeah, yeah.
And still this day, I asked Rolando.
I'm sure you still have it.
You still have it. And he's like, yeah, I put it in my living room. So I'm like, okay, at least there's some memories of that unit. Yeah, crazy story. I'm like, we went in there. It was like, luckily it wasn't a mess where it's like, we had to spend a lot of money on cleanup. There's just a lot of props, a lot of garbage.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. So why start Wolfpack? Why start a team?
Same reason how we started this podcast. I didn't like how new agents were being trained.
Yeah.
I really didn't like how these poor new agents that came in with a dream trying to make money and taught the wrong way and end up failing and leaving the business, right? And I, like I said earlier, I noticed a lot of guys that study school and come out and get the real estate license and coming in like a sales job. So I like to hire people from retail. A lot of my team members have sold in retail before.
It makes sense because if you can sell clothing, right?
It's not the clothing aspect.
Like
here's why. Let me explain. Kay. You as a top agent in Ontario standards, it's about 20 deals a year, right? Roughly, right? There's obviously those crazy producers, right? But 20 deals will land you $300,000-$400,000 a year, right? Or maybe depends on what you charge. They touch 20 clients a year. They've worked with 20 personalities. All weekend at Vaughan Mills, I've sold 5,000 suits. That's five different personalities. I know how to handle objections. I know how to match the right clients. I know how to watch my tone with certain people. I know when to be funny. I know when to what to say. One weekend, I have more sales experience than a top agent in our industry.
100%, yeah.
So you don't have the ability to understand different personalities and how to talk to people, and you just don't have that. You just, it can't teach. So I like to hire people with a lot of interaction with clients because then you know how to handle objections. You know how to read someone's face that they're not happy with what you're saying. Where another person will just keep going. They'll double down, right? And they'll keep selling. Like, you know, like you just understand a different way of selling.
Yeah.
So that's why I like hiring from retail. And if you go into brokerages, no matter how much they charge, their training consists of what? How to follow policies, paperwork, online leads, how to generate them, right? Door knocking, whatever. People still do it. Handing out business card, networking. great. But how do you do a sale? How do you make a sale? How do you get the clients to trust you? These are not being taught. What's the first initial conversation you have with that client? You're taught, you get their emails from open house and you put it in a safe search and then you spam them.
Mm-hmm.
They're not taught how to curate that client and make them feel comfortable. Sales is never taught.
Every client's different. They're all dealing with different situations.
You're taught processes. Yes. You're taught a system that does not work for you. You're not taught how to actually be a human being and make people trust you. So that's why I started the team.
Mm.
And because I came from almost nothing, yeah. Right? My life changed so much when I got into real estate. Like, it literally changed so much. I wouldn't say I had a rough first 2 years. I got really lucky. Yeah. And it's all luck because I'm not that good. But some people translate my luck from, it wasn't luck because I had 10 years of sales experience. I paid my dues before I got into real estate, right? But I believe I'm lucky. And because my life changed so much, I wanted to let other people that work retail, that get minimum wage, I want to see people's life change too.
Yeah.
My team's been with me from since day one.
Love it.
Every time they buy a house, I'm a part of it. I do the deal. I don't take anything from them. I do the deal. I want to be a process of them growing because I get excited when they buy a big house and they're coming from a condo. I get excited. Like, some of my team members over the years with me has gotten engaged, big weddings, kids now. I've seen everyone grow with me and everyone at such a different level and everyone's so happy. And I love it. It's great.
That's the best feeling.
Right. It's great.
It's not about the money and the rewards. Right? That's just the byproduct.
That always comes.
Yeah. There's no better feeling seeing either your clients growing or moving into that dream house, building a family. Same thing with your team members growing their business and then finally able to afford their investment property or their
investment, dream car, dream house, wedding, vacations.
They probably wouldn't be able to do that if it wasn't for the real estate career.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So that's the best feeling in the world. And I love what you said with why you started a team was because you want to see people grow and you want to make sure these agents are trained the right way. I feel you because that's one of the reasons why I started House and House Team, right? I feel like I have a commitment. Every morning when I wake up, I feel like I have a responsibility to drive positive change. Like, I've been in this real estate business for more than 15, 16 years, and this industry, this real estate business has been so good to me and my family. So how I can give back is to drive positive change. But how can I do that? It first starts within myself first. I wake up early, drive, make sure I go to the gym, treat my body good, and then I can drive positive change within my own family. Take care of my family first, then I can drive positive change within the organization, right?
Yeah.
Within the community, within our team. Then I can drive positive change within the industry. But it starts within us. Right? We can only drive positive change from the inside out. And that's what I feel like. Yeah, that's what I feel like the industry needs.
Yeah.
We only can do that by leading by example, right? And it starts within us. And that's why I'm always expressing and always saying like the values, the core values. And I'm always saying that this is what I feel matters most in order to provide the best service for your clients and represent your clients the best. It's like, you got to put people first. You got to stay humble, right? Like, you see that a lot. A lot of agents get way too ahead of themselves. And like,
just be honest.
Just
like
be honest.
Just be honest, man.
Be honest. And how you do your content, your marketing, you don't need to be a specific agent. You don't need to show like you're a specific agent. You're unique. So you don't need to wear that fancy suit and be in a nice car and the G-Wagons and all that. If that's what you like, great.
I would like a G-Wagon.
Yeah. I sat on a Chris Wu's G-Wagon.
Yeah.
Wow, that thing roars.
I feel good. It's a funny business. It's a funny business.
Yeah.
But I also wanted to keep it very, very tight. So my initial process is, no matter how much numbers you bring in, if we can't be family, I can't have you on the team.
Yeah.
So if you follow Wolfpack and you see,
well, that's why it's called the Wolfpack.
I don't have much new agents. And the ones I have are very, very close. They are my work family. Like, they, it, for me, work family's term to me is work. It's family. Yeah. Like, it's very important for me.
It's quality over quantity, and everybody needs to be aligned, and everyone needs to be like, no one is the head honcho, or no one's the cat ass just because they got a crazy deal done that year and making the most money or the awards. Everyone is equal. Everyone's supporting one another. That's how it should be.
It's pretty crazy because there's a lot of team members that come and interview with me, and they're so aggressive with me that it turns me off a lot. Like, I've turned down a lot of people. So they'll come to me, it's like, this is how much I sell. What's your split? It's like, I don't think we're the right fit.
Right away, right?
Yeah, I was like, listen, I don't care how much you sell.
Yeah.
Clearly, you need to, you like what we're doing, you want some help, so this is what I do, right? I hate when people come and it's like, I've done this. I want this from you. I want that from you. I want this. I was like, I'm pretty sure I'm not the broker of record here. I don't need an agent to sign with me. You're asking me for help. Mm-hmm. Like, it's like, I want to see if we're the right fit, because if me and you don't get along, like communication, personality, I don't even want to message you. Like I said in the beginning, I won't even have the time to help you. I won't have my energy to like grow you, and you're not going to do well. So I'm not the right person for you.
So how do you know when is the right fit, Duke? How do you know?
Funny. We go back to my retail days when I was managing. How much interviews I did a year. How many hires and fires. And I know. I know if someone's going to work on the team or not. I just know.
And you know someone's all fluff, or it's all about the attitude, right? Honesty.
Intuition. I don't know what it is. After all these years of interviewing, I know when something's going to play out well and who's going to do well.
Mm.
Right? So hiring is easy for me. Training is easy for me. Right? Content is not easy for me. Seems like you do very, very well with that stuff. And I will have to take a page from your book. Because I think the one thing you do very, very well, Raymond, I love your content.
Thanks, bro.
I think your content's good.
It's never been this way.
Of course. Yeah,
I've start from somewhere.
I've studied you. I went all the way back to your old videos. They were shit.
It's cringy.
It's so bad.
I still look back at it and I'm like, that's why I still cringe looking at it.
So I'm like, listen, I told my team, my partners, I was like, I'm going to film even though my hair sucks. I feel fat today. Whatever it is.
Yeah.
I'm going to film. I'm awkward. Just put it out. Post. But we're gonna start because, you know, in a weird way, you motivated me to do more content.
Amazing.
Right?
Awesome.
I was like, Freeman can do it. Let me, you know, for the next one, I'm going to show you my backwards walk in my next video.
Do it, brother.
I might trip.
Yeah, be careful though, especially in the winter ice.
My legs aren't as long as yours, so I'm going to take more steps.
No, I think we have a blooper coming out. I think there's one that I almost tripped. No, you do have to be careful in this weather, okay? You can't just be all for the gram and the content. Yeah, no, that's, no, I'm very humbled when I hear that, honestly, man. If I can inspire anybody else, because I know how hard it is, especially beginning, and I know how hard it is to just do it, because everybody are very like, they're like, I'm not feeling good today, and I don't like the way I speak, I don't look good, but you just gotta be you. You just gotta be genuine.
The problem here is I find that, because if you go on your Instagram, I'm sure you included, most of your followers are realtors.
Yeah.
And when you scroll through your feed,
okay,
it's all these listing videos and captions and podcasts, and you're scrolling, and it's like, a lot of the times it has information that's not valuable. So when I see other people post listing videos like, hi, welcome to, you know, Four Homes at, you know, Four Homes Drive, come check it out, and it's just a pan through of the listing. What you do different, which I like, is you talk about why this house, the information is valuable. You're not selling it, you're just talking about why this house, the information is relative. Your area, some about the schools, relative. Certain biggest layout for something, relative. It's information you want to digest. So that's I think that's where you excel versus a lot of other listing videos. And I think, but finding valuable points can be challenging sometimes.
It can be.
Very, very challenging, right?
Well, that's why I mentioned why I said driving positive change within the industry, because I was so fed up with seeing so many tours from agents that are not providing any value. The first 5-10 seconds of the intro of their listing is them pulling up in a G-Wagon, flashing their gold Rolex, taking off their
Gucci sunglasses. Yeah, yeah.
Showing off their Hermes belt.
Leaving their shoes on in the house, walking through.
Yeah, 20 seconds, 30 seconds, and then they say, welcome to my listing, blah, 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 blah.
If you notice, I always wear my socks. Ugly or not, I do not step my shoes into my client's house.
Listen, I like nice things. I appreciate nice things. But what I'm trying to say, and especially in the luxury market, I get it. You're selling a lifestyle. That's different. That's a bit different from selling the average home, the average $500 to $2 million homes. I get it. But house tours, and that's why at COVID, enough was enough. I always wanted to do this video. Finally, I had a chance to create the house tour that I envision.
I like your vision.
Yeah, it's to show that, you know, no different than you showing a buyer.
Yeah.
So to provide all the data possible in the video, everything from the pricing analysis to the school ranking to location, which is most of my buyers ask for. So why not put it all in the video?
Right.
So
it's funny because I like that, but I always have a problem feeling like I'm stealing something or doing it. So it took me so long, Raymond, to try to find how I can deliver the stuff you deliver in my own unique way.
Just do it. Just do it.
But I thought of a very fun way of doing it,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, do it your way then. Do your style. You can take some pages off me, or it's okay. And that's what I mean. I don't mind, honestly. I'm telling everybody now, if you just take my signature house story, please do it. Yeah, it actually makes all of our jobs easier.
I'm sure it does, but there's, you know, that young kid in me, that ego in me, that I will always like to make it a little bit. It's not that. It's just I want to put my own spin.
Call it the Wolfpack house tours. I don't care because that's what I want to see in the industry. I want everyone to be embracing and driving positive change.
What's that word? Blade sharpening blades, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's all about collaborating. We all grow together. There's enough business for everybody.
It's too much business.
Yeah, and it makes all of our jobs easy. Actually, the most recent condo that we just sold a few days ago, 18 Mondeo, it was like 6 offers. And then there's a few agents legit said that your house tour helped me sell the house a lot.
Because they know the area.
Yeah, because I explained everything possible. It made their job easier. So the one that won said that it's partly the reason because of the house tour. The buyers saw it and it helped them sell. Mm-hmm. And there's another guy that didn't win, but he said that I love your house tours and it made my job easier in a sense because I explained everything possible from
just,
the comps.
Just repeat.
Right? So yeah, I feel like if every agent in Toronto, in Ontario, in the world do house tours, it will only make our industry better and we'll all level up and it'll make our perception from the public even better.
It's funny because going a little back with your house tour and actually that's you helping sell the home. That's you doing your job for your sellers, right? And you said luxury homes, the cars and stuff like
lifestyle.
That.
Lifestyle.
You know, as
selling a lifestyle.
A lot of agents want to get into luxury homes and they don't understand the how annoying it is. I do about $2 to $4 million home a year.
Yeah.
It's a different animal,
man.
It's
a different animal.
Listen, and there's a reason why the agents need to be present there.
Yeah.
Because you can, on a regular townhouse, you can write, oh, this house has pot lights. But in a regular townhouse, that pot light is maybe 30 pot lights. In a luxury home, there's 4,000 pot lights. There's a big price. Well, when a luxury home says, we got pot lights, that pot lights cost them $200K. So that's why luxury price, like doing comps, there's no comps. Every house is different.
Yeah.
Every house has just think about it. 4,000 pot lights versus just pot lights at a regular house. There's a huge price difference. So
it's
a lot of agents don't understand.
It's one of a kind. Most of the time you're selling luxury, it's very hard to comp.
And it's funny. My first luxury listing was one of our team members' father. He almost didn't hire us because we never had a luxury listing before.
Mm.
And we pitched him and he almost hired the usual names, right? Barry Cole and all those big guys, right? He ended up giving it to us. We ended up breaking the record, but it took so long. It took a long time, but
good for you.
He's one of the smartest, most successful person I know. Like when we talk to him, like I just like instant humbleness. Like he taught me how to sell luxury home. He's like, Duke,
thank you very much.
He's like, Duke, what is this flyer you made and stuff like this? When you go into G-Shock, they give you a can and a watch and you serve yourself. When you go into Rolex, they put on gloves. They give you a gift to take home. You don't have, this is the luxury home like Rolex. Have the nice water out. Have, you know, a nice printed heavy duty booklets. So we got into building a whole luxury portfolio for this house. We built a story, built like thick textbooks that give to people leaving and explaining why. We built a whole thing for it and we sold the house. But it's funny, I never learned to sell luxury homes from our industry. I learned from a business guy, which applied normal business tactics. And I knew this. So my whole thing is I love to learn how to sell from other people out of our business, because I think a lot of people in this business can't sell.
Yeah, luxury market is a totally different animal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, but like people in our industry can't sell. And I love to learn from other aspects of industry. I think that's the best way.
Oh, nonstop learning. There's always something to learn. Even though we're in the business for this long, there's always
too much
something to learn. Yeah.
If it's not learning with yourself, it's learning with Thresa. It's like there's always something they throw at us, right?
So where do you see the future of real estate, Duke? Like with AI, prop tech, where do you see it's going?
I think our jobs are just gonna get slightly easier for the people that are adapting to it.
Yeah.
People are so scared of AI and thinking they're gonna take away our jobs. They forget that people, no matter how smart they are, you can take Elon Musk, for example. He gets emotional. He needs someone to tell him you made the right choice, right? Everybody's going to need that emotional guidance.
Yes.
Right? We're not going anywhere for at least, I hope, until I retire. Right?
And then when your kids' generation, then they'll deal with it.
Yeah.
No. AI will only help us and assist us. I agree.
Sure.
I agree.
A lot of things are a lot easier now. Did you see that new prompt on... I watched too much Instagram, but I learned a lot from it.
Oh, yeah.
On ChatGPT,
yeah.
There's two attachments now. One for Canvas and one for... what's the other one? Final Pro Cut.
Okay.
You can literally type in what you want and upload your video and it just edits for you.
They just launched Sora. Sora is the prompt.
Oh, that's so sick.
That's so sick. Where you prompt it,
and you can create
the video from it. So AI can create videos for you now.
I think the question should be directed at him. What do you think AI is going to do to your business?
Bye, Nav. AI is taking over your industry. No.
It's so crazy.
You just got to learn it and embrace it. And it's going to be there to assist you. It's the ones that don't adapt with AI are the ones that's
going to
be...
My life of not going to school, the thing I dread the most, not the selling, not the listing, not the open house, is the listing description. I suck at it. But honestly...
ChatGPT can do it now.
I know.
ChatGPT can do it for you now.
It's the best. For me, I dread it. I always ask my partner Nathan, I ask my wife, guys, come on, put it together, right?
So Duke, before we end the pod, I'd love to know what's your... favorite saying or what's your mantra that you go by? Do you have one?
I have one every so often, but I would say now is one day at a time. Or just one more day. If you make it through, if you look at a process, like when I work out, when I wanted to like cut out alcohol, right? If I say I have to quit for 3 months, that's hard. If I can quit for just another day, and then tomorrow I can just quit for another day. I can grind for another day. I can pick up the phone just one more day. Just another day. It just builds, right? It's little things that you do every day. It'll become a big habit, right? Just another day for me.
Yeah, just get 1% better every day.
Just a little bit. Just a little bit and just keep going. If you look at a long-term plan, like I need 10 years to hit this. If you're just like, if I just do this one more day, I'll get closer. Just one more day. Mm. One day is very easy to do. 10 years is very hard to think that far, right? So... every time I want to cut out drinking for a night, just another day. I wake up, I hate running, I hate working out. Just another day. I'm like 460 days straight into working out. You just got to keep doing it.
Awesome, man. Okay. Well, thanks, Duke, for coming to our pod. If you like what you're listening to, please rate us 5 stars out of 5 in your platform of your choice, Spotify, Apple Podcasts.
Maybe 6 stars.
Oh, there you go.
First time.
And leave us a review. Drop that review. Okay, thanks, Duke. Thanks, appreciate it, brother.
All right.